Hey there, this is Mobile Agent TV, helping agents stay on the cutting edge from coast to coast.
Welcome to Mobile Agent TV. I am Michael Horn of Remax Little Oak Realty in Langley, BC, and my co-host, as always, is Dave Faulkware from Bridgewater, New Jersey's Remax Preferred Professionals in the Enviro Realty team. Dave, what are the odds you make it to the end of the show?
50-50. Those of you that don't know, I have a temperature of 102. I've had it for like 3 days now, and I'm like dying over here, and I'm just going to ride it out, but I don't think I can. I'm going to the doctors, and we'll see what happens. So I'm going to give it the old Remax try.
Because we need you, Dave. We need you for R4 next week.
I'll be ready.
Okay.
I'll be ready.
Good, because that's my major concern. During the broadcast, you can interact with us live using the hashtag MATVLive, as well as you can get us at Mobile Agent TV on Twitter, as well as I have a Q&A feature enabled here on the blog, so you can go ahead and ask your questions of today's guest. We're going to be talking about advertising on Facebook. But before all that, we want to make our big announcement of our live show that we're going to be doing from the floor of the marketplace at RE/MAX R4. Tuesday, 11:30 Pacific to 12:30. So if you are at R4, come down to the marketplace, sit in with us live, and go ahead and participate in the live Mobile Agent TV. And if you're unable to come to R4, you can watch us live at mobileagenttv.com. 11:30 Pacific. That's 12:30 Eastern. So we want to announce our big guest. We are so excited about this, Dave. For the second year in a row, we're going to have the opportunity to sit down with Dave Liniger, who started RE/MAX back in the 70s. He's our he's the guy that drives this whole thing. So, Dave, second year in a row, sit down with this guy. We're going to go a little deeper than we did last year with Mr. Liniger, but an awesome opportunity.
Right, and I also saw a little bomb thing about Steve Passanelli.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, Steve Passanelli will be joining us. We'll be talking about video and real estate. We'll also have Lee Brown. We're going to put Lee Brown in right after Dave Liniger. It's the only personality that I think has the strength to come after Mr. Liniger, so that would be great. We'll also have Valerie Garcia, Corey Vasquez, and we're going to finish up with an update with Bruce Johnson to see how Motorcycle for Miracles is going. So that's going to be the live show from R4. Dave Liniger, Lee Brown, Steve Passanelli, Valerie Garcia, Corey Vasquez, and Bruce Johnson. On to today's show with Jimmy Mackin. You can get him on Twitter at Jimmy Mackin, M-A-C-K-I-N. And as always, we read out our guest's 160 Twitter bio. And his bio reads, quote, "We have a strategic plan. It's called doing things," close quote, Herb Kellyer. And he's the co-host of The Water Cooler, co-founder of Curator. Welcome to the show, Jimmy.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
So, Jimmy, there's a lot of people that are going to come on the show right now who are very familiar with you, that watch The Water Cooler week mm-hmm. in and week out and have been following you, but we get to change the tables a little bit and we get to chat about you because I know you're always doing the interviewing of the other guests.
It's a really strange feeling, I'm not going to lie. It's being on this other side of the camera here, guys, but no, I'm excited to be on and we're excited to, you know, share any advice that we can share with you guys today.
Perfect. Hey, can you do it without a beer?
I actually still have the beer on my desk from Wednesday night, which is super embarrassing. But yes, it is. I'm not that bad. It's only 1 o'clock here, but in Boston, you know,
anything after 12 is fine.
Yeah, especially when the sun goes down here at like 2 o'clock. So yeah, whatever.
Perfect. Now, Jimmy, I've been following you since way back in the MLS app days.
Yeah.
Facebook. So it's been like 5 years. You've been adding a ton of value to our business. But go ahead and give our viewers that might be from the Mobile Agent TV world and not from the Water Cooler world, and give us a bit of background on your history in the real estate industry.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, I started off in the technology space, you know, at a very young age of 18 when I failed out of school. I started a company called NH Dine, which is a real estate, this was before Yale, this is a real site in New Hampshire where we try to organize all of the restaurants online, right? We try to get menus online in New Hampshire because at this time there simply wasn't any restaurants online. You know, so my background, the company failed horribly, but my background and my passion for really technology, for what the web can do for businesses, started at a young age. My father's a software engineer, so it's really been ingrained in me from the very beginning of the web. for consumers at least. But in real estate, you know, I stumbled on working with a small REMAX brokerage in the New England area, and you know, from there, I quickly realized what an amazing opportunity is for someone to come into the space who understands technology and to really apply it to to our industry, which I think is in desperate need of having somebody or at least some voice out there, some voice out there just sharing what to do and how to make sense of all this. Because I feel right now, Michael, most agents, even today in 2015, feel paralyzed by the amount of options, the amount of choices, and the usual reaction to that is do nothing, right? Just ride the wave, ride your reputation. So I felt that was an opportunity to kind of share advice in a very simple way that was practical for agents, and it's been what I built my career on.
Yeah, and that's actually where I want to start, Jimmy, because about 4 years ago, you were doing a webinar, and you asked for volunteers to volunteer their Facebook business page, to which I don't even know if you even know this. It was my page, or you that you absolutely ripped apart. It was great advice. And then you gave me some great advice where we moved things over to a community-based platform versus listings and selling real estate, and that was the catalyst of My North Langley, which has been an absolute phenomenal thing for us and our team. Yeah. We have an engagement rate of right around 100%, which is crazy because the average page has a 0.94 if you have less than 10,000 fans. But a lot of that was advice that you put to us and our team, Jimmy, and I owe you a huge big thank you. But it was a shift in mindset that happened 4 years ago that paid dividends here in 2015. And like you said, I think that's a lot of where we are. It's about mindset, not actually about the tools. It's about the willingness to change and do something. So I can't thank you enough for that advice. But I see
Well, you're welcome, Michael.
Thanks, Jimmy. But I really see that advice in what you and Chris do on the water cooler in relation to Curator. You're presenting every week a web show that brings value that very rarely mentions Curator, but it's a gateway to find out who you are. And My North Langley is structured the exact same way. It's a gateway for people who live in my community to find out about our team and how we service our consumer. So talk about that overall strategy that clearly still works today, because water cooler eventually goes down that rabbit hole and ends up at Curator. So just talk about the mindset of that strategy like that.
Yeah, well, there's a couple things that I just mentioned on that topic. You mentioned about how technology sometimes can get in the way of a bigger vision or a mindset. A wonderful book, I can't remember the title of it, but it's from Forrester. They wrote, they have something called the POST method, P-O-S-T. And they said when you're evaluating using technology in your business, you apply this POST method, which is people, objective, strategy, and then finally the technology. Who are the people you want to connect with? What's the objective? What do you want to achieve? How are you going to do it? And then finally, what's the technology that's going to allow you to do that? And for me, it's always been very simple. It's people talking to people, right? If you have the ability to add value, make a real connection with somebody, right, then whatever medium you can do that in is going to be, work in your favor. For us, what we've experienced with the water cooler, and really through any of the online marketing we've done in the form of content marketing, blogs we've written for Inman News or when Chris was running for Tech Savvy Agent, we knew if we provided value, right, value for our customer base, they would see us as a trusted advisor, as an expert, someone they could rely on. And in real estate, we tend to flip the funnel, right? We tend to basically just try to bang it over their heads how great we are at our jobs, how they should hire us, right? And we feel that, we really sort of worship quantity over the quality, right? We want to get a million fans. We want to get or reach a million people. And if you focus on the quality of the conversation, right, if you focus on the quality of the engagement, you'll build a real relationship with somebody online. And that's just been a pillar of our business is doing that. And it's not overly complicated. So to put it in perspective here, think about it this way. If you log into Facebook right now and you go back and you look at your last 10 posts as an example, right, last 10 things you post on your page or your personal profile, how many of them actually provided value for the people that was consuming that content? It's a very simple test, because if you actually do this, right, in most cases, it's either you posting something about yourself that's only valuable to you as a vanity play, you posting something aggressively about promoting your business that's just focused on the direct sale, and people generally get turned off by that, right? So the balance between, you know, adding value, talking about yourself, and branding yourself, but at the same time, I feel right now, Michael, if you just break it down to the basic principle, how can I add value? How can I, you know, make a real connection with somebody? You know, you're able to do real things with Facebook at that point.
Absolutely. And Dave, on this note, you know, what Jimmy was saying was not about the number of followers, about the depth of that relationship. And you're a very let's go deep and not wide kind of a guy too as well. And ultimately what Jimmy says is it's back to people to people. It might be technology that provides the platform for that conversation, but the substance of the conversation doesn't change, and you're big on that, Dave.
Well, absolutely, and it took me a long time to sort of figure that out. When I first saw Facebook, I'm like posting all kinds of stuff up there, and maybe I still do, but, you know, I've developed relationships with real estate agents, REMAX agents all around the country. Where I am today in my business is Facebook has put me where I have today because I was, say, 2-3 years ago, I was 30 years, and I'm kind of, okay, I'm winding down. I'm doing a lot of business, but this thing has really kept me going. Facebook has. I don't do anything beyond that. But I really, I've got listings out of it. I've gotten relationships. I've had lunches with people that I never would have had lunch with before. And even if they're not people that are selling their houses, I'm having a good time. I'm belly to belly with people. And that's what it's about to me.
Absolutely. Now, Jimmy, we've talked about, you've already mentioned personal profile. We've mentioned business page. There's also a third portion of Facebook that exists, and that is groups. And you guys have really leveraged groups in a super powerful way. You don't have the same control as you would on a business page. You're much more like a moderator. But is there still value in 2015 for an agent to start a group? And if they started a group, would that be a geographical location, or would you go the referral route to build a group around agents maybe outside of your marketplace?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Michael. If you asked me that question a year ago, I would say every single agent who's listening to this conversation right now should invest in basically starting a community-centered group, right, where you connect people in your local community who live in the same geographic area around just local events, things to do, and just businesses and whatever else is happening in your area. We've done this with a lot of our clients. One that comes to mind is Judy Weininger. She has a group called the Warren Township Community Forum. I helped it start it, you know, years ago, and she's taken it and run with it, and she's done amazing work with it. Here's the hidden cost, though, of starting a group, and that everyone on this call needs to understand and appreciate, is that it's a commitment. If you're going to start a group, right, you can't let the community kind of govern itself. There has to be a moderator. There has to be someone involved. And that role can force you to become very unpopular very quickly, right? Usually it's Chris getting the negative messages and mean emails, but as someone who's run a group, I, you know, get them pretty regularly. People saying, why'd you ban me from the group, or you need to delete this comment, or this offends me. So you have to have thick skin if you're going to do it. You have to be willing to commit yourself to allocating the appropriate times to foster that group. And you have to be, and you have to have, like Russell Rhodes said on the show this past week, you have to have that servant's mentality, which is the greater purpose of the group has to precede your own goal, which is business. The business will come, the connections will come, but you have to have that servant's mentality. So, Michael, I'm not going to tell everyone on the call today that they need to start a group. I will say that it's an awesome opportunity. If you can meet that criteria above, be willing to, you know, take a hit now and then, be willing to invest the time in it to actually build it, nurture it, and get it to the point where it can actually be self-sustaining to some degree, and play the long play, right? This is 2015 right now, and I think we're all sick of the "I'll get you on page one of Google" messages, right, that we get from marketers all the time. I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge advocate of investing in trends that are going to be around for a long time, right? Jeff Bezos said this, I think, perfectly. He says, when you're thinking about investing in something, ask yourself this question: will it be relevant in 5 years? Connecting people in your community, right, in a social space, that will be relevant in 5 years. So if you're willing to invest the time, then, you know, it is certainly worth it, and there's a lot of value in it.
Yeah, I mean, My North Langley, it's a page, so there's a little bit more control that way. I can govern it a lot easier. I know when people post inappropriate stuff, I can just hide that and do it that way. So I really have enjoyed the page, and I've never really gone into the groups. I'm not the manager of any groups, except I participate in a lot of groups, and I see that as a lot more calories burnt, although there might be a benefit, but there's no really a head to the snake in a group. You can't really control it the same way you can a page, which is basically a glorified blog or a website of some kind, and so they act very, very differently.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Dave, if you have anything you want to add there, because you're nodding your head when I was talking about Judy Weiniger's group. But I certainly agree with that. You give up a certain amount of control. You are on rented land when you are marketing on Facebook. It's important not to forget that. This is why things like building an email list are going to be useful forever, because you have control over that. You have a channel in which you can directly market to consumers. You're not reliant on the platform in which you're building on. Now, don't take that the wrong way. We're huge advocates of Facebook advertising and Facebook marketing and curator. Obviously, it's what we build our business on. But we do understand and appreciate that you want to play that long game. You want to invest in marketing that's going to build, that's going to grow, and then ultimately, Michael, you have control over to some degree, right?
Dave, that's mindset. I mean, we talked about it. At the beginning, Jimmy said mindset. We're saying the long play. As someone building a business versus being transactional in this business, and all the great guests that the real estate guests that the guys in the water cooler bring on, they're all business people. They're not transactional. And I think someone who can see a community play or an advertising campaign that will play out over years is a fundamentally different agent than the person who wants to put an advertisement in the paper tomorrow and get a listing out of it, Dave. And you're big on the long play.
The long play, absolutely. I mean, I've been doing it a long time, and still, I'm going to be around a long time, and it's always the long play. I don't want to be a transactional broker, and we've talked about that a lot of times, and all the guests that we've come on here have talked about that. Mm-hmm. The only way for me to stay in this business is to do it long term and do it with relationships. And Facebook is just, to me, is one of the ways I can have a relationship with somebody that I couldn't if it wasn't there. You know, I'd have to I could sit here and ultimately you have to meet them, but it's a good way to start a relationship. It really is, and continue it, and like you said, bring Batty. And as far as Judy Weiniger, she's like 5 miles outside that window.
Yeah.
And she, here in our market, I know Judy, and she does a great job. And it's reflected in her numbers, numbers. One of the top agents here in the whole state of New Jersey.
Well, let me give you some facts about Judy Weiniger, and sort of I think something that's important to sort of talk about here, because this is something we advocate a lot, and this goes back to sort of the basic questions you're asking here, Michael, which is Judy doesn't call FSBOs, she doesn't call expireds, right? She doesn't really even farm, right? When she does farm, she sends something out that's incredibly valuable, and I could probably post it in maybe a follow up email. She has this guy called the 40 Tips of Selling Your Home in Warren, New Jersey, which is this just collection of really useful tips for anyone who's thinking about selling. It doesn't really push her and her services. It just adds value. There is an opportunity in our space where we can actually do marketing that doesn't suck, that we don't hate, that we don't wake up in the morning and we're just banging through the phones dialing for dollars. Chris and I have advocated this for a long time. Now, if you interview the top 100 agents across the country, you know, you'll see that if you ask that top 100, maybe 90 of them do expired marketing, do FSBO marketing, they cold call, they do all these things, they door knock, right? I've always said that these marketing activities in 2015, right, these activities are successful because the individuals who are executing on them are persistent, right? And they play it, right? They do it every single day. If they took half of that energy and they invested it in marketing activities that can scale. A great example of this is a video Rand Fishkin released. It's called I want everyone to Google this, because to me this is just articulates the point perfectly. It's called Flywheel Marketing. Okay? Flywheel Marketing. If you haven't write that down, everyone who's listening, Flywheel Marketing, Rand Fishkin from Moz. This basic premise is if you can invest in marketing that actually can build momentum and grow, then the energy and effort it takes you to do those marketing activities will continue to yield better and better results. So as an example, it takes a finite amount of time to write an email, right? If your email list is 100 people, when you write that email and you send that email, it's going to reach 100 people. right? But if your email list is growing to 150, 200, 500, 1,000, the same time and energy it took you to write that email, right, is now reaching and impacting more and more people, right? And that's just one sort of small example of this flywheel concept, but that doesn't apply to interruption marketing, right? You call one person, it's one-to-one every single time. And the moment you stop doing that, the moment you stop getting business. So I won't belabor the point, but you guys get where I'm going with it.
No, and absolutely. And I find it interesting. If you say that 90 out of 100 people that are doing big business are doing their business that way, I would think that those 90 out of 100 were doing big business prior to this culture shift we've entered. I don't think there's many people that have started their business in the last couple of years that are doing big business today that are doing it. I think a lot of that has to do with on the foundation of those agents building their business, they're maintaining that structure that they've learned from 10 years ago. I think
living off your reputation. That's it. It's living off your reputation. Exactly.
Yeah. Now I'm going to go down this little bit of a rabbit hole because I want to get actually into Facebook marketing and actually paying to play advertising. I explained this yesterday. I was up talking with some Remax offices up in the Okanagan, and I touched on this point. I think it's very, very dangerous to advertise in today's world on Facebook in order to get likes, not on posts, but on your Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is we have an engagement rate on our community page of right around 100%, which is really, really, really high. But the reason why I think we have it is every single one of those people that have become a fan of our page have found it organically. That resonates with that content, so that when we post content out on Facebook and people react to it strongly right away, the edge rank kicks in through Facebook, and then Facebook organically pushes that content. If you are buying fans through giving away promotions or whatnot, they're not actually fans that are going to engage in your content. And so when Facebook looks at your first 10 minutes of a post, because you have so many fans that really don't resonate with your content, they don't engage in it, and then your edge rank suffers for it. So I think advertising for fans is dangerous, although I think the huge opportunity in today's Facebook world is paying to get your message in front of the consumer that isn't a fan of your page through dark posts or what they call unpublished posts. And I think this is an opportunity that is enormously powerful in the real estate industry. Jimmy, on that note, give people an overview about what dark posts are, and then let's go a little bit deeper and talk about the opportunities that dark posting on Facebook provides agents.
Sure. It's definitely a hot topic. I'm going to come back to that question because I just want to make one point on the topic of advertising. For me, it's important to establish the framework for advertising, right? Let's just take Facebook out of the equation and just look at this objectively for a moment. Great ads, right? They start with an underlying purpose, right? What are you trying to achieve? Define what success is for your ad. So, you know, that success might be leads, it might be awareness, it might be likes, it might be engagement. Define what success is. That's the most important thing to start off with. And then when you start thinking about that, start working through the process. Okay, how can I convey that message in a concise way that resonates with consumers? So that's where copy comes into play. Services like or sites like CopyBlogger are great, you know, services. One that we mentioned on the show last Wednesday was closingcall.co, which we love, right? It's all about messaging and sales emails, which you can use to really kind of fine-tune your copywriting. From that point, once you get from messaging, then obviously it's the ad, it's the creative, it's the visual aspect. That's what people are looking at. Matthew Shadbolt, I think, coined this term, which I love. He goes, you want your content to have stopping power in the news feed. People are scrolling, and bam. Right, yep. That ad just sort of slams them in the face. So this is high contrast ads, right? Bright colors, great imagery, right? These are things you need to obsess over. So I'm going to get to dark posts, but I want to lay this foundation because it's important to talk about this. And then what you want to do is once you establish those basic principles, what success is, what your message is going to be, what ad copy and image you're going to use to really stop people in the news feed, then you have to think about the post click. What happens when they click through on that ad? Where do they go? In almost every instance when we analyze this, Michael, we see people just driving to the homepage of their website. We had Ollie Gardner on the show a while back. He created a company with a few other guys in Canada, right? Unbounce, unbounce.com. Phenomenal service. You can create landing pages through a really simple sort of what you see, what you get editor. you have to drive people to sort of these single-purpose pages that fulfill that basic promise that the ad makes, right? So, again, at a high level, start with success, figure out what that message is going to be that's going to resonate, have some stopping power with your creative, with a really great imagery, and then fulfill that promise with the landing page so you can offer whatever it is you're advertising. If you stay the course with that basic workflow and that process, right, then using service tools like DarkPost make a lot of sense. So DarkPost, what the basic premise is this, is that rather than posting to your Facebook business page, right, and then boosting that post to advertise, you can, behind the scenes, essentially create a bunch of different variations of an ad, right, and run those ads, right, that unpublished, they don't get published to your page, so people aren't seeing all these little small variations that you're running. And the bigger idea is you can actually optimize for conversions, you can optimize for clicks, you can kind of try different copy, try different images to see how these ads perform without subjecting your fans to getting a bunch of posts, like seeing 10 of the exact same posts that are just slightly have slight variations in the copy. So dark posts, in simple terms, allows marketers to A/B test or multivariate testing without annoying their fans.
And without the necessity of having fans, Jimmy. I mean, here's the thing. The last 5 years, we've gone out trying to build up our fan count so that we have the privilege to market to them when we want. You can start a Facebook business page today, have no fans, maybe your mom, and then advertise to everyone you want in your local marketplace. And I think the power of the dark post is it's not an advertisement. People are seeing it in their stream, in their newsfeed. And so then you can storytell. The ability to write an ad targeted just at engaged couples to be married, talking about buying their first home. You could never write an ad that was so hyper-targeted that cuts through the enormous noise of social by being hyper-targeted. I mean, in the back end of Facebook, how you can target people and the categories in which you can target them is absolutely shocking. And I think that's the opportunity, is to find out what your niche is and then write the copy that absolutely has the stopping power. It says, congratulations on your engagement, then your story, and then are you looking to buy your first home, whatever it is. That has stopping power because it is speaking to the consumer, and I think that's where the real opportunity in the advertising marketing portion lies.
Well, you bring up demographics and targeting, right, how you can sort of sort your target audience. I would just simply warn people not to become too obsessive over drilling down to your ideal audience. As an example, they use third-party services like Axiom, which provide data for Facebook about consumers, their behavior. And what we have found at Curator is that you can get too clever, right? You can drill down and say, you know what, my ideal person is this individual, and you can shrink the audience size down to like 2,000 or 1,000 people, and you don't have enough exposure to really determine whether or not your ad actually has legs, right? It's not, they call it statistically significant, right? It's not reaching enough people. There's not enough things happening for the ad to determine whether it's successful or it's a failure. So my advice is start simple with location and age, right? And maybe family status or college education. Use kind of the big, broad brush strokes. And over time, as you see a certain type of individuals, right, converting at a higher rate, then you can start drilling down based on that. The temptation, Michael, is someone's going to log into Facebook. They're going to go to the back end of Ads Manager or Power Editor. They're going to look at, oh, wow, I can select likely to move in 6 months, and they're going to choose that. And it's going to be like five people, right? Yeah. And Facebook, and like, you just don't have enough of an audience size to be able to find out if that ad's going to work or not. Right.
But the power is for Dave. Dave works in a lot of retirement communities in his area. And then he can determine that last year a large portion of the buyers came from east of him, west of him, where it is. And he could run an advertisement for those that are 45 plus or 50 plus because he's working in retirement communities. And therefore, you can spend more on a smaller audience because that's what that is targeted for. So you're right, maybe not that hyper-targeted, but being able to make the copy resonate with the reader adds the value, I think.
Yeah, well, it's funny you bring up you know, like whether it's vacation or retirement communities, one of the interesting filters Facebook has just added, this is actually applicable to anybody who lives in a second home market, because second home markets are really difficult to market to because you essentially have to go all across the major metropolitan areas. Facebook has just introduced a new filter that allows you to target people who have recently traveled to this area. So you can, as an example, if you're in Vail, Colorado, you say, okay, my metro areas that the business comes from is, say, Southern California, New York, maybe Canada, wherever, right? Florida. Well, if I target those major metro areas, and then I also add that additional layer of they've actually visited here recently, and you know how Facebook knows? It's not people checking in. It's when they log into their phone, Facebook's geotagging that, and they know that individual has been to Vail. Those types of filters, Michael, right, when you start to appreciate and understand your consumer, are really exciting, right? There's a lot we can do with that. But like any marketer will tell you who's had experience, you just have to test and test and test and change and update and test, right? And keep rinsing and repeating that model.
But that's something you can do on social that most budgeted wouldn't let you do in traditional media. You don't have the ability to A/B test in a newspaper. There's no way that data exists the way it does today. I mean, Dave, yeah. If you can't measure it, don't do it. In today's world of technology, you can measure to the finite detail. And Dave, I know you keep an eye on everything you do. And if you can't measure it, you don't do it. That's how you built your business.
Correct. You know, if you put an ad in the paper, the only thing you knew was the phone rang. And if the phone didn't ring, that's my only test. That's the way it was. And now you're absolutely right. You can measure everything. And actually, what he just said about that, I did an exact thing like that, what he just said, there's a place in New York, Staten Island, that's where a lot of the people that move to these communities, it's like 40 miles from here, I did the exact same thing on a community page, and I wound up with a couple of leads of buyers, and, you know, it worked. I don't do community pages to a minuscule degree of what I should, but, it's worked for me.
Absolutely. So Jimmy, I'm seeing right now, Valerie tweeted out the video, so if everyone's watching, wants to get a link to that Ren Fishkin video, just look at the hashtag MATVLive. Jimmy, talk, I lost my train. I had a great question too as well. So on that note, okay, right, I found it. I'm the Chris Smith of the mobile agent TV. I'm kind of all over the place. I see curator ads on Facebook right now. Like I'm seeing the click here to watch the video to find out what a curator does. What's the algorithm behind that? Because I think if we as agents looked at who's advertising to us, it's amazing how relevant all the ads on Facebook are just to me, and then my wife gets relevant Facebook ads to her. Yeah. But what is the algorithm that you're...
It can be an awkward conversation if you're looking at your spouse's newsfeed, right? Or vice versa. Well, first, there's one thing you just touched on there in comparison to traditional media versus social advertising. This is a very important distinction that Dave was just touching on, too. You can't A-B test in a newspaper. They're not level playing fields, right? And I talked about this in the show this past week, but this idea that if you run an ad, like Chris is texting me right now, he's telling me that the Joe Taylor Group had grown their page by over 2,600 connections with no like campaigns, right? It's come entirely through them advertising content that's useful and relevant to the Las Vegas real estate market, right? Consistently, right? The reason they've grown their page and they've grown it with targeted people who are actually interested in becoming fans of their page, because when you advertise and that and individuals engage with that ad, that then spreads to their network, right? There's that sort of feedback loop we talked about. That doesn't exist in traditional advertising or any type of direct response advertising. We talked about on the show. If I send 100 postcards out tomorrow, no one's making copies of those postcards and mailing it to 100 of their friends, right? So that dynamic doesn't exist. That's why we're so bullish on this idea. Obviously, you have to have sound principles of advertising to take advantage of it, but that's why there's this unfair advantage. It's not level playing field with advertising. To Michael, to your point, what Facebook's getting really good at is they're getting really good at trying to improve the quality of the ads that they show to consumers because two things happen. One, the consumer gets a better experience, which is ultimately their goal because the customers right? Are their profit, you know, that's how they make their money, right? Without customers, they don't make money. So they are the product, right? And then the second benefit is the more relevant the ads, the more money advertisers will spend because they're getting better results from it. So what you're referring to is something called retargeting, which has been a big trend in 2014. What it essentially does, it says, okay, I'm targeting this large group of people. If somebody clicks on my ad, I'm able to cookie their session, right? And because I've cookied their session and established that this person has been on my website, I can then display other ads to this individual because I know they have been essentially shown some intent. They've come to my website, right? You can put a tracking pixel on your website, Michael, that you can have. So no matter where they come from, whether they come from a Facebook ad, postcard, SEO, your Twitter account, you can cookie every single one of those individuals, so when they come back to Facebook, they're seeing those ads in the news feeds as they go forward. Now, Facebook has done something really interesting with retargeting, to go a little deeper on this topic. Most tools, like whether it's AdRoll, there's like Perfect Audience, there's a few other ones out there that people use. They usually have a minimum ad spend, right? Like $25 a week. And you may not have a large enough audience to be able to kind of control that. Facebook has essentially said for $1 a day, which is the minimum budget, you can advertise or retarget people based on their behavior of their site. What I love, just sort of as a pro tip for your audience, Michael, what I love is use a retargeting ad not as a direct response ad. Right? Hey, don't go here to fill this information out to get this lead. Use it as a branding play. Showcase a 5-star review that you just have from a customer. Use it to link over to a really helpful article with no registration, right? Use it as a branding play, because think about this from a holistic standpoint for a moment. If you're calling them, if they're receiving your emails, if they're seeing your ads, and the ads are seeing they're providing value, they're establishing trust, right? The person is making the connection in the mind that this guy's everywhere. This guy's got to be, or this gal's got to be, you know, an expert. They've got to be a great agent because they're all over the place and no one can afford to advertise otherwise. So my advice for retargeting is absolutely take advantage of it. We're huge fans of Curator, but think about the branding and reputation play over the direct response play, because I think there's a lot more value in that, right, in that respect.
And I think that goes back to your previous points though, Jimmy, is actually creating the ad might be the last step in this process, as opposed to why you're doing it and what's the response going to be. And you talked about, okay, and when you talk about advertising and the bright colors of the ad and having that stopping power, mm-hmm. but then wherever that ad takes you to a landing page, a squeeze page, that page has to look like the ad so that the experience is consistent. And that mm-hmm. is sometimes lost on people about if the landing page doesn't provide the experience that the consumer thinks it's going to when they get there, it's going to crush the opt-in rate of creating the emails that actually has the long-term value for, you know, the flywheel marketing sort of what you're talking about. So consistency in your marketing is paramount.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent point. You know, listen, there's countless tips on how to develop a beautiful landing page. There's tools like Unbounce, which we mentioned, lead pages, like we've mentioned. You could hire a designer from services like 99 Designs to design one for you. You know, I'm a huge fan of hiring experts to do things you're not good at, right? So if you're listening to this webinar today or this show today, you know, if you're not a designer, which you probably aren't, you know, find one that can just design a page. And these guys know how to use these tools, so it's something you should take advantage of.
But taking about those guys and maybe we'll talk about to Dave about it. Even if you were to spend the money and do a marketing campaign that was targeted, that resulted in email addresses, compared to the cost of traditional marketing, advertising in a newspaper, the newspaper came and interviewed me and wanted to do a two-page news story on our paperless office here, and at the end of it, they were willing to write it for $1,600, which was a flip reverse. It was ended up being a sale pitch, but in my mindset, I'm like, the damage I could do on social marketing was $1,600, like you say, a dollar a day or $20 a day to actually be able to measure it. The ROI of the money in versus money out. Is there a better way to market in 2015, Jimmy, than social advertising?
Let me throw a question in here. And way back when I first started, when the internet first came out, we had Comstock, and I spent, I was spending $500 a month on ad keyword placement. Cost 3 cents a click, was cheap.
Sure.
I mean, I got thousands and thousands of things, and we were able to manage it and did a lot of business, and some of those people are still in the back of our website and they're past clients and customers. Okay, here's Facebook now, comes along to do advertising, what Michael just said, it's nothing. It's just like literally, in my mind, it's no money at all. You know, the price of a meal, you can build your business a little bit on there. So I guess my question is, do you see this going down the road, that this is going to change like keywords did, where now the same keyword that was 2 cents is now $50, you know, with Facebook, or is there any way to predict that?
Yeah, it's an excellent question, Dave. Well, there's an important distinction to make between search ads, right, and social ads. One is demand fulfillment, and one is demand generation. So demand fulfillment is a search ad. Someone types into Google, I'm looking for a house for sale, right? And you are simply fulfilling that. You know the intent, okay? So anybody who can sort of just get some basic training can come in there and start bidding on these keywords. And you have national companies who are pushing up the prices in local markets to get traffic, to acquire that page view, that visitor. That's why, Dave, we've seen the cost go from 2 cents, 5 cents, 10 cents, a buck, two, $3 a click, right? So these companies are getting really, really sophisticated with how they spend their money. This is why if you're right now at home and you're at your computer, if you Google homes for sale in your local area, Bridgewater as an example, you'll see a combination of big time marketers as well as platforms that are advertising the Zirples, the Boomtowns, the Tigers, right, of the world. Their ads are there, and everyone's kind of fighting over the same group of traffic. Now, the companies I've mentioned, they're all really good at what they do. They have teams of data scientists that are analyzing the trends. So I think agents are at an inherent disadvantage, Dave, because of cost, because they're late to the game, and because of the fact that they're competing against these large organizations that have the infrastructure to run ads. Demand generation is an entirely different discussion. Demand generation, which is what social advertising is, requires the advertiser to be creative, right? To engage the consumer, to spark up the interest. That buyer, right? I'm interested in buying a house in 6 months as an example. I might not be thinking about buying, right? It's not top of mind, but I am technically a buyer, right? I'm in the process of buying. The marketer, the advertiser, has now the challenge to actively engage with relevant ads that individual who might not be in that mindset right there. So, Dave, that pushes a lot more creativity onto the advertiser, and it forces the individuals to experiment a lot more, right? To really bring a level of advertising that they're probably not used to, which is just kind of shooting fish in a barrel like AdWords. So certainly, trends have shown this over time. As an advertising platform becomes more saturated, price will get driven up, right? The advantage that social advertising has over the latter here we talked about with demand generation with search ads is that as agents, we know the area. We know the local market. We know what interests people in our area more than the larger networks, larger portals. I see ads for Boston that people advertise in my newsfeed that are totally irrelevant to people who live in Boston, but they're just advertising to reach people, right? They kind of use the platitudes that we all see in advertisements. So I think that local advertisers have a distinct advantage over the national brands in the social space. So I know it's a long answer to your question. Prices will certainly go up, but I do I don't think it's going to be apples to apples in that respect.
Yeah, and it goes back to what Nobu Hata said, was that give your client something they can't Google. I mean, reality is you have knowledge in your local community that doesn't exist anywhere else and can't be sort of blanket advertised. Andrew asked Jimmy, I'm not sure because I don't know what he's talking about. Andrew's a really, really smart guy. Thoughts on rumored Facebook Cinemagraph ads. Do you know what that's about?
Cinemagraph ads. I've never heard of it before. Yeah, sorry, Andrew.
That's all right. I mean, that's something new. We have to figure it out.
Even the gurus can't keep up with all the
things. That's the thing.
It's about video. That, you know, we can put video directly on it now. Maybe that's
yeah. No, and absolutely. And that's where I want to go. And I have Facebook released recently that four times as many videos are in a consumer's news feed today than they were a year ago. And I don't think there's four times as many videos being produced. I think there's more videos being produced. But Facebook has made it very clear in the moves they've made in the past month that they have YouTube-type intentions, being able to have a featured video on your page. Your Now Business page has a very YouTube-like channel on your page where you can have playlists and featured videos. There is no doubt that Facebook punishes you organically when you share a link that goes out to YouTube versus uploading it directly into Facebook. Now, I think the view counts are a little misleading because of the autoplay feature, especially on mobile devices. But we are very bullish on this show. I am personally on the impact that video has for real estate agents, highly polished Raj Kazar stuff, legally obligated to say that, or very raw iPhone updates, that doesn't have to be always polished. Mm-hmm. Jimmy, you produce video every week on the water cooler. You've talked about video on water cooler a ton. What is it, and what opportunities lies in this rise of Facebook video that has been a completely obvious play for Facebook the last 6 months or so?
Yeah, I've been doing this all show. I want to answer your question, but don't let me forget before the end of the interview. I do want to talk about some of the new things that Facebook's doing that I want to share with your audience. They have this thing called the multi-product Facebook ads and conversion tracking. Let's make sure we don't lose those 2 points. So for video, Facebook video is you touched on it, Michael, which I think you're right on, which is they have this autoplay feature. So the views can sometimes be distorted because when you log into Facebook and it starts playing, you know, they're counting that as a view. Facebook absolutely is giving precedent for videos that are uploaded directly to Facebook versus you linking over to YouTube. YouTube's the second biggest search engine, right, in the world. Facebook is not ever going to be in the search business. I don't think they will be. They've tried it a couple of times, just like Google has tried to be in the social space. They really do a lot better when they stay in their lane, you know, if you look at all the things they've done. Going back to, you know, there's a page I want everyone here to check out. I want you to go to Facebook. I want you to look up Live on Cape Ann. It's Live on Cape Ann. That's C-A-P-E-A-N-N. If you go down to a post on February 5th, you'll see the agent shared a video of a new listing that was just about to hit the market, right? It hasn't been posted on the MLS yet. That video, she ran an ad behind it, right? Disclaimer, this is a curator client. We advocated that she did this. She ran an ad behind this video, Michael. She got over 70 people to like the post, which then organically spread to their network. She got 12 people to share the post, right? They're actively clicking share. They're writing something about the video, and they're posting on their page, which spread it even further. And she got over 20 comments on the video asking questions. The video, for an ad spend of about $60, has nearly 8,000 views right now. Okay, now go to your YouTube channel right now. Find out how many videos you have that have 8,000 views.
Yeah.
Right. We don't even get that on the water cooler for the show that we do. Right.
But the odds, though, Jimmy, too, as well, under 8,000 views on YouTube, even our highest. I mean, it's the comments too that don't exist on YouTube the way they do in a social space. The ability to engage and converse with a potential buyer afterwards too, as well.
Yeah. Well, if you ever want to like lose faith in humanity, just go read some YouTube comments because like it is the most vile, disgusting. Like, and I'm not a prude, guys. I'm a 29 years old. I live in Boston. I'm used to rude people. You know, it even offends me, which is it takes a lot. So you're absolutely right. Now, I'm not trying to compare YouTube to Facebook video. There's a lot of value in YouTube video for getting your content displayed in the results page, right? We know that YouTube videos are 50 times more likely to show up for a particular keyword in the search results organically on Google than a typical blog post with no rich media content. So I don't want to go in the discussion of comparing YouTube versus Facebook video. They both serve a purpose. Right, but if the goal is to actively engage and maximize your reach, then you'd be crazy not to upload a video directly to Facebook, right, and then advertise and promote that in conjunction with uploading the video to YouTube like you normally would, right?
I mean, completely agree. The promo videos that we shoot for this show get uploaded to YouTube, become the trailer on Google+. We then upload it to BombBomb, and we send that out to our newsletter people. And if you do want to sign up for the newsletter, go to mobileagenttv.com and just sign up, and we let you know about the guests. And then we upload it, and you know, because you commented on it, Jimmy, organically to Facebook. So it's the same content, it's just uploaded different places, and it definitely increases the engagement a ton. Back to Cinemagraph ads, Valerie has posted a blog post from HubSpot about it, hashtag METV Live. Chris Smith just weighed in, says, so basically a GIF ads. So that would be interesting as far as engagement, if it is sort of a GIF or JIF or however you want to pronounce it, niche or niche. So that's interesting too as well. Jimmy, we've already taken up almost an hour of your time, but I do want you to get to what you were talking about, was conversation dragging. And so, hey, I just want to check in with my amazing co-host that's running 102 temperature. Dave, you're still good? Hey, still good. We haven't had him talk a lot, but you're still muted. You're fine. Jimmy, talk about conversation dragging, and there was another thing you want to talk about too as well.
Yeah, so conversion tracking is something I want to talk about, but let me first start talking about, I think we're all sort of sick right here, by the way. This is going to be the subplot to the show. So the first thing is the multi-product ads, okay? Now, what's interesting about this is that, you know, most of these ads come out, and the use case they give you is like for Amazon. As an example, Amazon can run an ad, and they can display five products, right, in that one ad. And the consumer can simply, like a carousel, scroll through that ad and click on the product they want to learn more about, right? It gives the advertiser the flexibility to have multiple calls to actions, multiple promotions in one single ad. So one of the things we immediately saw when we saw this come out recently, and let me give a plug to a guy named John Loomer. If you're not following him on Twitter, follow John Loomer on Twitter. He has, in my opinion, the single best blog on the topic of Facebook marketing. Guy knows his stuff. He writes about it. He lives it, breathes it. He is a guy who shares just tremendous insight and knowledge, as well as with real hard data, which is fantastic. What you can do with multi-product ads, if you think about it for a moment, is you can upload, let's say graphics for your website, and you can advertise in one ad, right, the different parts of the site that you want the consumer to go to. So you can drive buyers to here, sellers to there, people who are looking for articles about local information there, to a neighborhoods page as an example, or whatever other aspects of their site you want to drive them to, you can link people over. So consumers will have a much more sort of engaging experience to kind of choose what part of the site is most relevant to them. It's a very, very interesting tool that's just a feature, I should say, that Facebook's just introduced. And, you know, we're going to keep an eye on it and see what comes out of it.
That's very, very, very interesting. That's very, very interesting. Because I think there is an enjoyment on the consumer controlling the experience or having some say in the experience. I think it's the same way, you know, annotations on YouTube work. Like, if you want to hear more about certain information, like, let the consumer control the experience, you know, and then they get to the information they want a whole lot quicker. I think that's interesting.
Well, I was just going to say, Michael, it dovetails to, I think, the point that I don't want to miss here is that you can optimize the ad based on engagement. Right. So let's say you have five different parts of your site that you're advertising, or five different things that you're advertising. You can optimize for engagement. So basically, Facebook will determine through their data and their algorithms which of the content that you're advertising is most engaging to the consumers you're targeting, and they'll just begin to display that more. Right.
Now, well, this is like an ABCDE test, then, right?
Because basically, right. They call it like multivariate testing. And it's super hard to do. Like, it makes sense when you read it, but it's like really hard to do that when you actually try to get down to brass tacks and do it. But this is the last thing I'll say about the topic of Facebook advertising. I hope you guys are getting value out of the show.
Tons of value, thanks, Jimmy.
It's a lot of fun to be on this side of the interview. Facebook has gotten really good at spending your money, right? And they want you to be successful because they know when you're successful, you'll invest more. So they have all different types of bidding options. You can bid for engagement, you can bid for clicks, you can bid for impressions. One type of bidding model, which is really interesting to us here at Curator, is advertising for website conversions. Now, what you would need to do as an advertiser is you would need to install a conversion tracking pixel, right, on your website. Basically, the success page, if you will, of your website. Once you install that tracking pixel, as you begin to run ads, when you hit a certain threshold, I think it's like 15 or 20, you can begin to advertise and use the bidding model of conversions. So Facebook will then say, in the demographic you're targeting, say 35 to 65, right, we will show this ad to the people who are most likely to convert into a prospect for you, an opportunity for you, right? And this is a phenomenal type of bidding model because it gives you, the advertiser, full control over what you really want at the end of the day, which is more opportunities and more leads. So for me, I just think that as we go forward here, like I said at the very beginning of the show, Michael, take the holistic approach. Start with, you know, defining what success is, what your message is going to be, how you're going to have that stopping power in the ad, what landing page you're going to drive them to. Use a conversion tracking pixel so you can see it from end to end, from conception to conversion, right? And then build off of that basic idea. So if you don't have a conversion tracking pixel installed right now, it's something I would absolutely do as soon as this call is over.
Okay, on that conversion tracking pixel comment, Jimmy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of value that someone that's professionally does something will save you. There's a lot of time and money that a professional will save you. And for a lot of people, they're paralyzed by everything we've talked about or some of the stuff we've talked about today.
Yeah.
What is it that Curator does for clients? What's the opportunities for agents to pass that expertise over to you guys? Give us the overview about Curator and then tell our viewers where they can go if they want to find more about what you and Chris do day in and day out.
Well, first off, thanks for having me on the show. It was awesome. This is a great opportunity. I haven't had a chance to do a session like this in a long time. So, I appreciate the invite. And the plug. At Curator, we have a saying, we're trying to put an end to bad real estate marketing, right? And for us, we realize that if you're watching right now, you probably do email. You probably send email, right? You probably maybe have run some Facebook ads. Maybe you have a website, right? But when you really break down the elements here, you're probably not getting a lot of results from your ads. You're probably not getting a lot of replies and engagement from your emails. You're probably not getting a lot of traffic to your website. So at Curator, and if Chris is watching, I really want him to tweak this slide. We have a slide that really represents what we do, which is, on the left-hand side, you have the Business Insider map, right, which is a list of all the different technology products that are available to real estate, right? There's hundreds of products. And on the right-hand side, you have a Starbucks cup of coffee, right? And at Curator, we like to think that we essentially can help you focus on the right-hand part of that slide, which is focusing on connecting with people, having meaningful conversations. We handle the technology. We set it up. We implement it. We run your ads. We optimize it. We send your emails. We do all that for you, ultimately, and this is the big key, so you can have more conversations with buyers and sellers. And that's it. And that's what we do at Curator. And, you know, we work with 200 of the top teams in the country in Canada. And, we've grown 300% year over year because we feel like there's a real need for this type of service. And, you know, it's been an amazing experience for us. We've learned a lot. And, we're continuing to keep pushing ourselves forward and keep delivering a better service for our industry.
So curator.com or curator...
curatorsystems.com. Yeah, curatorsystems.com. We'll tweet. Systems with an S or not with an S. I don't know. Chris is always the one doing the sales pitches here, but, you know, you guys got the idea, and I hope you guys got value out of it.
Absolutely. And Water Cooler, watched the show on Wednesday. Actually, I watched it Thursday morning because I was in the car driving up. Yeah. Not every week, but every other week, or keep an eye at curator.com.
Yeah, we do it. The next show we have is coming up on the 11th, I believe, which is the March 11th. We have Neil Patel coming on from Kiss Metrics, wow, which we're really excited about. Founder of Kiss Metrics, Crazy Egg, and a bunch of other services, advisors to many companies. A truly, truly brilliant guy in the space of analytics. And frankly, this is an area that, as marketers, Dave talked about this earlier, as marketers, we have an incredible amount of insight and data available to us, right? The challenge is, how can you take data and extract insight from it, right? Yeah. That's the challenge in 2015 as marketers. How can we look at 100 page views and 10 minutes time on site, and how can we let that influence and drive our decisions, right? And Neil Patel is the man on that topic. So we're excited to have him on, and thanks for the plug.
Hey, no problem. Dave, you gave it 50-50. You made it to the end of the show. I had my money on you the whole time. You're a trooper. I appreciate it. We didn't hear you talk so much this episode. That means my wife won't enjoy this one as much, although Jimmy was fantastic. What's your takeaway?
You do better if you stay in your lane. I love that quote.
Yeah.
Doesn't maybe pertain exactly to some of the stuff you said, but to me, that pertains to everything.
Yeah. Yeah, play to your strength, right? I mean, we said that a million times. That's why we say it. Play to your strength. And great things will come of that. Jimmy, they can get you on Twitter at Jimmy Mackin, MACKIN. Really want to thank you, Jimmy, for coming on the show. Just stick with us for a few seconds while we wrap up, and I do appreciate it. We have our huge, exciting live show coming to you. We won't be here next Friday, but we will be here on Tuesday, March the 3rd at 11:30 Pacific, 2:30 Eastern. We have the founder of RE/MAX, Dave Liniger, on the show. We have great agent Lee Brown, who's been on the show before, great friend of our show and great friend of the Water Cooler, too, as well. Steve Passanelli, I know a good friend of your guys', is going to be on the show. Valerie Garcia, Corey Vasquez, and Bruce Johnson for our live show from the floor of the Marketplace at R4. If you are at R4, come down and see us. We'd love to have you come by the show. And if you can't get out to Vegas and out to R4, you can watch everything at mobileagenttv.com. I think that's it. Jimmy, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. Huge fan of yours. Once again, I really, really sincere thank you for all the great advice and the value you've provided our team over the last 5 years. We really appreciate it. Thank you
awesome,
so much.
Well, thanks for having me on the show tonight.
Yeah, and the tonight. See, he's already. But the value that you and Chris bring every week on the Water Cooler, the guests that you guys bring on are amazing. There's nuggets every week. If people aren't watching the Water Cooler religiously, they are absolutely fundamentally missing out on improving their business. Dave, get better. We need you in R4. We're at our home stretch. You've got big presentations. I get to present from the stage of the Mandalay Bay Theater, so no pressure there. Come out and see that presentation. That's Wednesday at 2:30. It's going to be good. If you have any referrals heading out to the East Coast of the United States, get a hold of Dave. He'll put you in the hands of the right RE/MAX agent. Any referrals coming out to the West Coast of Canada, get a hold of me. I'll put you in the hands of the right RE/MAX agent. As Melanie Gelly of RE/MAX Fort McMurray wants us to end every show, please tell 5 other agents about Mobile Agent TV. We grow every week. It provides us the opportunity to reach out to amazing guests like Jimmy Mackin that will come on and give us an hour of our time. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks, everyone, for watching. We'll see you all on March 3rd.